pleased to be able to have this opportunity to present to you kind of a progress report on a project that we've been sponsoring at ASCO, and of which Jeff has been a key part in the presentation that he's given and the role that he's played in the course of two phases in this effort, one throughout last year, and then the second phase is this year. So in my overview, I'll talk about why it is that we want to revisit strategic culture as an analytical tool. I'll talk about some of the challenges that we've had in developing a comparative framework for using strategic culture as a tool. And then I'm going to talk about the link, if there is a link, between strategic culture and weapons of mass destruction. We believe that understanding strategic culture is vital to effectively implementing and safeguarding U.S. national security and foreign policy. According to the 2004 Defense Science Board study on strategic communications, hostility to U.S. national security goals and policies is undermining U.S. power, influence, and strategic alliances. And then this board placed some of the blame for that on us. Much of this hostility is driven by a lack of understanding of the cultural and regional context for U.S. policy. So that puts, I think, a certain amount of responsibility on us for understanding what it is we're doing, how the effect of what we're doing has on other cultures in other regions. And it's not only important to pursue this for the sake of better understanding threats, but it's also important to know who our allies are, who our friends are, and what their needs are, what their perceptions are, and how we're impacting them, how they perceive what we're doing as well. In 2005, last year, we brought in some scholars, including Professor Lantis, to review the status of scholarship in the field, to identify critical outstanding methodology issues. We had some experts write up some case studies on China, Pakistan, and India. And then we had a discussion during the course of a very interesting conference in Monterey, California last September to validate the utility of comparative strategic cultures as a tool for gaining insights into behavior, policy, and incentives for acquiring, using, or proliferating weapons of mass destruction. Now, that is the unique part of this project, is we're not only reviving or reassessing the idea of comparative strategic cultures as a tool for threat assessment, but we want to focus it on issues of weapons of mass destruction. So that was the first phase, though, was looking at the field generally. The second phase is applying it more to weapons of mass destruction. So the phase two objectives include developing a framework for comparative analysis, selecting specific case studies with relevance to issues of weapons of mass destruction, deriving some policy relevant insights for weapons of mass destruction, and then developing a specific product. And that product is a curriculum for teaching strategic culture in institutions of higher learning. So that is where we are. We're in the second phase of that. Here's some of the methodology issues, and they track with what Professor Lantis presented here. Although in this case, I am proposing some solutions. We've developed a provisional definition and a common analytical framework. We are defining at geo and social political boundaries of those cultures most relevant to deterrence and nonproliferation of WMD. And we've agreed on a provisional theoretical framework for applying social sciences to specific issues of national security, and specifically the tool of comparative strategic cultures. From a pool of about 20 or so case studies, these are the ones we have chosen to focus on in phase two of this project. The criteria for selecting these were their relevance to weapons of mass destruction issues, researchability, that is there data available on these case studies? The importance of certain baseline cases, that's why the United States is in here. Their value for our curriculum objective, and salience for addressing methodology issues. So we've chosen these case studies. We have assigned and asked certain experts to do write on each of these. The one that we haven't been able to identify yet is Syria. We need somebody to write a case study on Syria, a strategic culture case study. If anybody knows an expert on Syria, let me know, because we could use some help in that area. I think we've got all the other ones covered. But in addition to those case studies, I have asked that we prepare some essays on some other broader aspects, including essays on emerging strategic cultures. Now, I've said Japan here. Well, Japan's strategic culture may be 2,000 or 3,000 years old, so why am I listing it here as an emerging strategic culture? I listed it here because we see it as evolving and going through some really important transformations right now. So there is a change occurring, and something is emerging there. And we want to better understand that in the context of other emerging strategic cultures. We want to look at non-state actors and whether there is a strategic culture among certain non-state actors. We will prepare an essay on strategic culture in WMD, and I've asked someone to look at and to provide their thoughts on the future of strategic culture, not only the future of strategic culture as a field or a disciplinary study, but the field of strategic culture and its future as a tool of threat assessment as well. For the purposes of this project, in a workshop we held earlier this year in Washington, we hammered out this definition of strategic culture, and we call this a provisional definition, because we want the case study authors to validate this definition, or if they find it inadequate, to propose revisions and correct it. And then we would like to make this contribution is developing this common definition. There are three aspects of strategic culture that we're most interested in, and it's starting to get towards the issue of weapons of mass destruction. And these are those three questions. What does a given strategic culture have to say about conflict and human nature? What does it have to say about the enemy? How does it conceive of that enemy? And what does the given culture have to say about the utility of violence or the laws of war? This is what we're asking our case study authors to look at. They will have Professor Lantis's write-up, though, on the field, too, and I want them to be cognizant and responsive to his list of the to-do things that we need to accomplish if we are to validate and use comparative strategic culture as an effective tool. Now, part of our effort here in phase two of this effort is to translate a social science theory or approach into a policy-relevant analytical framework. And to do that, we have to ask ourselves, does strategic culture matter? When, under what conditions, and to what extent does strategic culture shape behavior and define values? And which behaviors and values are most subject to cultural influence? And I want to know what the answers to those questions can tell us about the policy goals of assuring, dissuading, deterring, and defeating states and non-state actors. Those goals are tracked with our national security objectives. In fact, let's take this policy implications aspect a little further. With respect to weapons of mass destruction, I have asked our authors and our project leaders to look at the what does strategic culture have to say about the acquisition by a given country or non-state actor of weapons of mass destruction? What does it say about the employment or use of weapons of mass destruction? What does it say about the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction? And what can it tell us about the predisposition of a given strategic culture to adhere to international or domestic norms, especially those related to weapons of mass destruction and non-proliferation? One of our essays that was produced during phase one of this project last year, and I should mention that the several outstanding essays were produced, and they are available both on the ASCO website and on the website of the Center for Contemporary Conflict at the Naval Postgraduate School. All the studies are available on those websites. This is one of those studies, Michael Desch, Cultural versus Structure in Post 9/11 Security Studies. He said that strategic culture may matter most under these three conditions, these three circumstances. Now, let me call your attention to an issue that I have to confront. Part of my job is translating this academic analysis into something that policymakers in Washington can understand. For example, just to give you a sense of my challenge, if I walked into the Assistant Secretary for International Security Affairs office, and that's who I report to at the Department of State, and I said, "Mr. Secretary, cultural variables may explain the lag between structural change and alterations in state behavior," what do you think he's going to say? Now, I know what that means. I know what that means. But does the assistant secretary, who's a very smart guy, but a lawyer by training, a former Hill staffer, what is he going to say to me when I tell him cultural variables may explain the lag between structural? What is he going to say when I say strategic culture may have a more independent impact in structurally indeterminate situations, Mr. Secretary? I have to translate this for Assistant Secretary Steve Rademacher and others like him. I have to explain what this means and what the implications of this are for U.S. policy. He is going to say to me, first of all, he's going to say, "What the heck did I mean by that?" And then he's going to say that he's going to ask me the quintessential policy relevant question, the one that academics hate to hear. So what? That's what he's going to say. And I will have to answer him. So what? Now, many of you have the luxury of not having to answer that question. And that's a wonderful position to be in, and there's a lot of value in not being constrained by the question, so what? But as a policymaker and advisor to policymakers, I don't have the luxury of blowing off that question. I have to answer it. So here's our effort to answer the question, so what, and what does that mean? Professor Lantis raised these questions. These are some hypotheses about the circumstances under which strategic culture may be a salient consideration relative to other explanations. And these are hypotheses that we will examine in the course of phase two of this effort. Here's some other propositions. And this is an effort to get further at the question of weapons of mass destruction and a potential link with strategic culture. What if there was a culture a given culture, and there were significant views by the keepers of that strategic culture that using nuclear weapons could be justified by reference to that culture's canon of scripture. What if there was a culture that assumed a wider conflict with other civilizations was inevitable, and even that such a conflict should be instigated, and that that culture would emerge from that better off? How deterrable would that kind of a culture be? What if this culture had leaders who didn't appreciate how profoundly destructive a nuclear war would be? What if they'd never seen a nuclear weapon go off? What if they had not gone through the duck and cover culture that many of us went through in our early schooling during the Cold War? What if that culture believed its principal enemy was something to be demonized and actually deserved to be annihilated? What if that culture had a shared narrative that defined its identity as one that was a chosen people or group, and that is that it had a messianic status? What are the implications of a culture with those kinds of views for deterrence and nonproliferation or threat to use weapons of mass destruction? This is what I'm getting at, but notice that I've phrased those in terms of questions. In our phase two of this project, we hope to be able to answer those. Here's how we're wrapping up phase two. We've had a series of workshops up till now that have better defined and given us some provisional definitions. A month from now, we will hold another workshop in Park City, Utah. We'll discuss this proposed framework, and the preliminary case study efforts will be presented. We will hold a final workshop at Reading University in the United Kingdom. The significance of Reading University is that is the university at which Colin Gray is a professor, and he has invited us to hold our final workshop at that. At his university, he will be the keynote speaker there. And finally, we will produce a curriculum on comparative strategic culture that will be ready for use in classrooms beginning, hopefully, the fall of this year. And we hope that we will not only have made a contribution to the scholarship and revival of comparative strategic cultures as an analytical tool, but we will have begun using that tool to gain insights into issues. Pleased to be able to have this opportunity to present to you kind of a progress report on a project that we've been sponsoring at ASCO, and of which Jeff has been a key part in the presentation that he's given and the role that he's played in the course of two phases in this effort, one throughout last year, and then the second phase is this year. So in my overview, I'll talk about why it is that we want to revisit strategic culture as an analytical tool. I'll talk about some of the challenges that we've had in developing a comparative framework for using strategic culture as a tool. And then I'm going to talk about the link, if there is a link, between strategic culture and weapons of mass destruction. We believe that understanding strategic culture is vital to effectively implementing and safeguarding U.S. national security and foreign policy. According to the 2004 Defense Science Board study on strategic communications, hostility to U.S. national security goals and policies is undermining U.S. power, influence, and strategic alliances. And then this board placed some of the blame for that on us. Much of this hostility is driven by a lack of understanding of the cultural and regional context for U.S. policy. So that puts, I think, a certain amount of responsibility on us for understanding what it is we're doing, how the effect of what we're doing has on other cultures in other regions. And it's not only important to pursue this for the sake of better understanding threats, but it's also important to know who our allies are, who our friends are, and what their needs are, what their perceptions are, and how we're impacting them, how they perceive what we're doing as well. In 2005, last year, we brought in some scholars, including Professor Lantis, to review the status of scholarship in the field, to identify critical outstanding methodology issues. We had some experts write up some case studies on China, Pakistan, and India, and then we had a discussion during the course of a very interesting conference in Monterey, California last September to validate the utility of comparative strategic cultures as a tool for gaining insights into behavior, policy, and incentives for acquiring, using, or proliferating weapons of mass destruction. Now, that is the unique part of this project, is we're not only reviving or reassessing the idea of comparative strategic cultures as a tool for threat assessment, but we want to focus it on issues of weapons of mass destruction. So that was the first phase, though, was looking at the field generally. The second phase is applying it more to weapons of mass destruction. So the phase two objectives include developing a framework for comparative analysis, selecting specific case studies with relevance to issues of weapons of mass destruction, deriving some policy relevant insights for weapons of mass destruction, and then developing a specific product. And that product is a curriculum for teaching strategic culture in institutions of higher learning. So that is where we are. We're in the second phase of that. Here's some of the methodology issues, and they track with what Professor Lantis presented here. Although in this case, I am proposing some solutions. We've developed a provisional definition and a common analytical framework. We are defining at geo and social political boundaries of those cultures most relevant to deterrence and non-proliferation of WMD. And we've agreed on a provisional theoretical framework for applying social sciences to specific issues of national security, and specifically the tool of comparative strategic cultures. From a pool of about 20 or so case studies, these are the ones we have chosen to focus on in phase two of this project. The criteria for selecting these were their relevance to weapons of mass destruction issues, researchability, that is there data available on these case studies, the importance of certain baseline cases, that's why the United States is in here, their value for our curriculum objective, and salience for addressing methodology issues. So we've chosen these case studies. We have assigned and asked certain experts to do write on each of these. The one that we haven't been able to identify yet is Syria. We need somebody to write a case study on Syria. Strategic culture case study. If anybody knows an expert on Syria, let me know, because we could use some help in that area. I think we've got all the other ones covered. But in addition to those case studies, I have asked that we prepare some essays on some other broader aspects, including essays on emerging strategic cultures. Now, I've said Japan here. Well, Japan's strategic culture may be 2,000 or 3,000 years old, so why am I listing it here as an emerging strategic culture? I listed it here because we see it as evolving and going through some really important transformations right now. So there is a change occurring, and something is emerging there, and we want to better understand that in the context of other emerging strategic cultures. We want to look at non-state actors and whether there is a strategic culture among certain non-state actors. We will prepare an essay on strategic culture in WMD, and I've asked someone to look at and to provide their thoughts on the future of strategic culture, not only the future of strategic culture as a field or a disciplinary study, but the field of strategic culture and its future as a tool of threat assessment as well. For the purposes of this project, in a workshop we held earlier this year in Washington, we hammered out this definition of strategic culture, and we call this a provisional definition because we want the case study authors to validate this definition, or if they find it inadequate, to propose revisions and correct it. And then we would like to make this contribution is developing this common definition. There are three aspects of strategic culture that we're most interested in, and it's starting to get towards the issue of weapons of mass destruction. And these are those three questions. What does a given strategic culture have to say about conflict and human nature? What does it have to say about the enemy? How does it conceive of that enemy? And what does the given culture have to say about the utility of violence or the laws of war? This is what we're asking our case study authors to look at. They will have Professor Lantis's write-up, though, on the field, too, and I want them to be cognizant and responsive to his list of the to-do things that we need to accomplish if we are to validate and use comparative strategic culture as an effective tool. Now, part of our effort here in phase two of this effort is to translate a social science theory or approach into a policy-relevant analytical framework. And to do that, we have to ask ourselves, does strategic culture matter? When, under what conditions, and to what extent does strategic culture shape behavior and define values? And which behaviors and values are most subject to cultural influence? And I want to know what the answers to those questions can tell us about the policy goals of assuring, dissuading, deterring, and defeating states and non-state actors. Those goals are tracked with our national security objectives. In fact, let's take this policy implications aspect a little further. With respect to weapons of mass destruction, I have asked our authors and our project leaders to look at what does strategic culture have to say about the acquisition by a given country or non-state actor of weapons of mass destruction? What does it say about the employment or use of weapons of mass destruction? What does it say about the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction? And what can it tell us about the predisposition of a given strategic culture to adhere to international or domestic norms, especially those related to weapons of mass destruction and non-proliferation? One of our essays that was produced during phase one of this project last year, and I should mention that the several outstanding essays were produced, and they are available both on the ASCO website and on the website of the Center for Contemporary Conflict at the Naval Postgraduate School. All the studies are available on those websites. This is one of those studies, Michael Desch, Cultural versus Structure in Post-9/11 Security Studies. He said that strategic culture may matter most under these three conditions, these three circumstances. Now, let me call your attention to an issue that I have to confront. Part of my job is translating this academic analysis into something that policymakers in Washington can understand. For example, just to give you a sense of my challenge, if I walked into the Assistant Secretary for International Security Affairs office, and that's who I report to at the Department of State, and I said, Mr. Secretary, cultural variables may explain the lag between structural change and alterations in state behavior. What do you think he is going to say? Now, I know what that means. I know what that means. But does the assistant secretary, who's a very smart guy, but a lawyer by training, a former Hill staffer, what is he going to say to me when I tell him cultural variables may explain the lag between structural what is he going to say when I say strategic culture may have a more independent impact in structurally indeterminate situations, Mr. Secretary? I have to translate this for Assistant Secretary Steve Rademacher and others like him. I have to explain what this means and what the implications of this are for U.S. policy. He is going to say to me, he's going to say, what the heck did I mean by that? And then he's going to say that he's going to ask me the quintessential policy relevant question, the one that academics hate to hear. So what? That's what he's going to say. And I will have to answer him. So what? Now, many of you have the luxury of not having to answer that question. And that's a wonderful position to be in, and there's a lot of value in not being constrained by the question, so what? But as a policymaker and advisor to policymakers, I don't have the luxury of blowing off that question. I have to answer it. So, here's our effort to answer the question, so what, and what does that mean? Professor Lantis raised these questions. These are some hypotheses about the circumstances under which strategic culture may be a salient consideration relative to other explanations. And these are hypotheses that we will examine in the course of phase two of this effort. Here's some other propositions. And this is an effort to get further at the question of weapons of mass destruction and a potential link with strategic culture. What if there was a culture, a given culture, and there were significant views by the keepers of that strategic culture that using nuclear weapons could be justified by reference to that culture's canon of scripture? What if there was a culture that assumed a wider conflict with other civilizations was inevitable, and even that such a conflict should be instigated, and that that culture would emerge from that better off? How deterrable would that kind of a culture be? What if this culture had leaders who didn't appreciate how profoundly destructive a nuclear war would be? What if they'd never seen a nuclear weapon go off? What if they had not gone through the duck and cover culture that many of us went through in our early schooling during the Cold War? What if that culture believed its principal enemy was something to be demonized and actually deserved to be annihilated? What if that culture had a shared narrative that defined its identity as one that was a chosen people or group, and that is that it had a messianic status? What are the implications of a culture with those kinds of views for deterrence and nonproliferation or threat to use weapons of mass destruction? This is what I'm getting at, but notice that I've phrased those in terms of questions in our phase two of this project, we hope to be able to answer those. Here's how we're wrapping up phase two. We've had a series of workshops up till now that have better defined and given us some provisional definitions. A month from now, we will hold another workshop in Park City, Utah. We'll discuss this proposed framework, and the preliminary case study efforts will be presented. We will hold a final workshop at Reading University in the United Kingdom. The significance of Reading University is that is the university at which Colin Gray is a professor, and he has invited us to hold our final workshop at that. At his university, he will be the keynote speaker there. And finally, we will produce a curriculum on comparative strategic culture that will be ready for use in classrooms beginning, hopefully, the fall of this year. And we hope that we will not only have made a contribution to the scholarship and revival of comparative strategic cultures as an analytical tool, but we will have begun using that tool to gain insights into issues of weapons of mass destruction and deterrence. Thank you.